Welcome to the Whiskey Congress. Honest, open talk dedicated to speaking the truth to those who are open to hearing it. Black, white, right, left. Most importantly, honest, bold, and fueled by good whiskey. In Whiskey Veritas, we are Whiskey Congress. Join the evolution.
Whiskey Congress is back in session. In spite of the coronavirus, we are together in studio, which I'm completely comfortable with, although we did practice responsible social distancing, so good for us.
Yes.
We talked last week about what we were going to do when we voted in the Ohio primary, and then the Ohio primary was temporarily postponed, and then a judge stepped in and said, oh no, we're doing it. And then the governor basically said, fine, I'll find another way to postpone the primary. So the Ohio primary did not happen. It's been postponed until early June. I thought the communication of what was going on was terrible, because I went from, okay, it's on, okay, it's not, okay, it's back.
Yeah, I mean, I think up until Tuesday morning, I mean, I think Tuesday night, we were a
Monday
go.
Monday night.
Or, I'm sorry, yeah, Monday night, we were a go to go vote. And then Tuesday morning early, I woke up and saw that we were not. And so, or maybe, I mean,
I saw it late Monday
maybe
night.
Maybe it was late Monday night, but I think I went to bed early. I usually do, old man now. But, you know, I mean,
it was just a cluster. Yeah. I woke up not knowing, okay, am I going or not?
I'm not going to beat him up over it. I'm not going to.
You're talking about Governor DeWine.
Yeah, I'm not going to beat up Governor DeWine over it. I mean, this is a unique situation.
It is.
I mean, we don't deal with pandemics that often. And I think he's handled a lot of things very well. I think that's a hard decision to have to make. And I think he was dealing with real-time information and just trying to figure out what was kind of best for everybody involved. And it kind of, you know, and there were other things at play here,
sure.
Right? Because Bernie's pushing back and saying, well, if you do this, it's going to impact me negatively. You know, his, you know, like Bernie, like you've got the DNC machine that obviously wants Joe Biden.
Right.
But then you've got, Bernie's got enough of a following where he's like, his people are going to push back, which they did. And, you know, you saw that. So, I mean, I think it worked out. Yeah, it was a cluster, but I don't know if this is something where we attack and blame. Right?
Actually, I'm going to give Mike DeWine a ton of credit. I'm not a fan of the guy, but he took decisive action. He, I think, was doing it for the right reasons. And I was in a bar at 4:30 p.m. on Sunday when we were waiting for an announcement of what was going to happen. And the bartender has been very good to both of us and a nice person and a friend of ours. And she was freaking out. And in my mind, I'm like, they are not going to say you can't go out to a bar.
Yeah, they are.
And they did.
Yeah, I mean, I knew that was coming, and it made sense based off of
it
what
does.
We know about the disease or the virus. Like, yeah, a bar, people gathering in bars, getting drunk, and, you know.
And mind you, that's 2 days before St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah, I mean, that's a huge, I mean, it's a huge, I mean, that was a huge economy money killer. I mean, there were a number of establishments that were really had the screws put to them because
yeah.
of this. Obviously, the governor knows about the money that was lost here for a lot of people, and that's a hard decision to make. But again, doing it for what they believe is the greater good and the best interest.
And I think he was intellectually consistent.
Yes,
because
he has been.
Because if you would have said, "Well, we can still do the polls, but you can't go sit down in a bar." By the way, I thought it was funny, the other day you were in my neighborhood and you're like, hey, I'm in your neighborhood, it's lunchtime, do you want to get lunch? And here was literally your call to me. Hey man, I'm in your neighborhood, you want to grab shit.
Right, because it was like we can't.
What can we do?
Right, it's just like, you want to go to a park?
I'm not going to have a picnic with you.
Yeah,
I love you man, but I just don't want to send that message, I just don't.
Me and you unfurling a blanket in the park with our meats and cheeses. Right?
That is okay.
All right, maybe
we're abandoning this line of discussion now.
So, yeah. So that, I mean, that was something that really, like, and it, that has hit me a couple times. Right?
Me
like,
too.
I mean, Friday up until I don't know 9 o'clock last night, I was making plans on going to the gym and taking my daughter to the daycare in the gym, and then I realized, shit, the gym's been closed. And
5 days,
like, yeah, I mean, like now. I've gone as far as I went, and I bought a treadmill. I ordered one from Nordic Track, but it won't be here for 2 weeks. So I'm not sure how beneficial that's going to be, because this might be resolved by then. Although, who knows?
Or it might not.
Right. I mean, there's been a lot of bleed. I mean, CNN, the purveyor of all things just terrible accuracy news, put something out there that this could last up to 18 months.
Oh, boy, which, I didn't see that.
Okay. Yeah, just fucking
if that madness happens, then we're forming a commune. My gardens will come into play. My gardens and firearm collection will...
Yes, will definitely rise in value exponentially. But, you know, I mean, maybe this thing, maybe this whole lockdown quarantine thing lasts a month. I've seen and heard a number of different things. I don't want to put too much stuff out there. What I do know is that Ohio is handling it pretty well.
Yeah.
And we have, I mean, Ohio has a really robust healthcare system, especially in Northeast Ohio. You've got Cleveland Clinic, you've got university hospitals, you have Metro. Metro is the county hospital for Cuyahoga County. And it's the only trauma one, the only level one trauma center in Northeast Ohio. So that we get a lot of, you know, trauma patients from all over. And why that matters is and they're really successful at saving lives, where university hospitals, if like you're a trauma patient and you go there, like chances are you're going to die. And that is not me making exaggeration. Like their numbers are not good. It's something that they don't talk about within the organization. And the only reason I know that is, you know, working in housing, we work with a lot of the hospitals on different programs. And that's something that has come up. Because dealing with affordable housing, people get shot where we have housing. So that being said, like we have some good medical places here, especially right where we live.
Cleveland Clinic is nationally and internationally.
I mean, I talk about this all the time, but Cleveland Clinic has places in Dubai. There's a Cleveland Clinic in Florida. There's a it's crazy. So they're making our area is making a lot of progress in this, and that could help get us back online sooner than later. But, you know, there's a lot of scary stuff out there. I don't want to put too much out there as, you know, I heard this and I heard that. You know, there are concerns about a long-term lockdown. You know, like someone coming out and saying, all right, whether it's the president or the governor coming out and saying, all right, 2 weeks, everybody in the house, nobody going to work, no nothing. Let's try to get this thing under control as much as possible. You know, everybody in the house for 2 weeks, except for, you know, only key essential personnel, which will be defined in specific groups, and try to kind of get this thing under control because of the 2 week incubation period, and then kind of go from there. How real is that? I don't know. And I don't want to put it out there as something I heard for sure, or that's even a remote possibility, but it's just, it's been floated. And so those are some things to be concerned about. You know, in terms of preparedness, but...
You know, I mentioned last week that I don't want to, you know, forward things that I haven't vetted, because I saw one thing that was like, if you just drink water, it'll flush the virus down your throat and your stomach. I'm like, I doubt that's true,
and I'm not going to spread shit.
False sense of security is a bad thing.
Right, you definitely don't... You don't want to have a false sense of security. You don't want to downplay the risk. I think we have to... You know, there's just a balance that comes with this in terms of... You know, common sense, caring about other people besides yourself, embracing the we as opposed to me, and understanding that, listen, this is a situation, why is this an overreaction? In a lot of sense, maybe it is an overreaction, but at the same time, you know what? No, because one, you'd rather this end up being an overreaction and looking back and saying, we overreacted,
right?
As opposed to looking back and having way more people dead. You know, we've already, you know, the numbers are climbing on the death rate more than people are comfortable with. We saw a big spike, you know, last night. Today is Saturday, you know, Friday going into Saturday. Just looking at the numbers, there was a large spike in deaths that are directly related to the coronavirus. And so a lot of people have been comparing, like, oh, well, seasonal flu kills this many people, blah, blah, blah. And all of a sudden, like, the thing is, like, we're seeing, again, we talked about this a couple weeks, exponential growth. Right, you're seeing it where we only had a few hundred cases in the United States. Now we're into the 10,000 plus, going in, you know, approaching 15,000 plus. And by the time that we talk again next week, chances are that number is going to be close to 30,000. Right? I mean, we're seeing that doubling of the number, in some cases more, every 6 days. Again, that we talked about a couple weeks ago. Right? Like this was not, again, me pulling something out of my ass. This is, again, science.
And part of it is gained information, because like West Virginia was talking about how the fact that they had zero positive, and because you've tested 78 people.
Right.
I mean, I have family in West Virginia. I went to college in West Virginia. I've got friends in West Virginia. Some of them are playing the this is all bullshit card because they're all Trump folks, and I don't know how they're playing the. Well, now Trump is agreeing with the catastrophe, but you know it's easy to say you have no cases when you haven't looked for it.
Right.
If we've had zero bank robberies in, well, you have no police force, so therefore the bank robberies don't get reported because they didn't get whatever. A bad analogy, but it's the same kind of. Yeah, the concept is there though. But again,
you have to. This is something that if you don't have the test and you can't test people, or you're limiting the number of people, like you're limiting it to. People with X symptoms, or you're only limiting it to healthcare worker. Like in some instances, you know, like there were some places where they said we don't have enough tests. We can only test the people that come into the hospital showing symptoms, and we can only test our healthcare workers who have been exposed to those people that we have concern about, because you don't want the healthcare workers spreading it to people who don't have it, or just getting it in general.
Or worse, people who are going to hospitals and need help and they're exposed to stuff that makes it worse.
It's like you go in there, you know, with a broken leg, and then you come out with a broken leg and a coronavirus.
Right.
Just bad all the way around. So, I mean, like, there's, again, a lot of people are saying all this doesn't need to be done. What about the, I mean, people die of other things all the time, and we don't shut the country down, so what are we doing? And it's just like, man, if you got an opportunity to save lives, then you take it, and when you have something new like the coronavirus, which is new, right? And they're just like, oh, well, there have been coronaviruses in the past. Yes, they have, but this is a mutation, right? Yes. This is a different version of that. We don't have an immunity to it, and it's attacking us very aggressively, and it's spreading very aggressively. There's plenty of numbers out there from sources that we trust, whether it's the CDC or WHO, the World Health Organization, John Hopkins, things like that are putting out numbers that are consistent that you can trust, that just show you that something's going on here that is different than what has gone on in the past, and we have to pay attention to it.
And we need to pay attention to it in social settings. I'm about to admit something that I did. There's a bakery that I go to fairly regularly in Lakewood, Ohio. And I walked in, and there were about a bunch of people, and they were standing about 6 feet apart, and they were talking. And I said, okay, well, these people are yakking about what they're going to order. So I stepped up towards the counter, and a guy said to me, hey, man, we're in line. We're just trying to keep a safe space. To which I replied, I'm really sorry. That was kind of dumb of me. And I then walked back to the back of the line. And the guy kind of apologized to me for calling me out. I'm like, please don't. You're right. I'm wrong. So thank you. And you get your cinnamon rolls before me. But it was just funny because in, you know, pre-coronavirus, I was like, okay, these are people who are just kind of lollygagging, and I'm going to go order my, you know, bread and get out of here. And I respect the guy for telling me, like, hey, man, not trying to be a jerk, but you just cut line. And my brain re-engaged, and I'm like, sorry, man, thanks.
Yeah,
I mean, and that's the right approach.
Right.
A, for him to say something to me, and B, for me to go, my bad.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you could have got defensive about it and told him to fuck off and everything else.
Which would have been completely wrong.
Right, but you didn't. And it just, you know, this whole thing has hit me. You know, I took my daughter to the mall, and I know I shouldn't have. But it was very short-lived because everything in the mall was shut down. All of it.
Right.
Including the Disney store.
Which devastated
her. Which like, made all of this so real for her. Like, not the fact that she wasn't going to school all week, that didn't make it real, but what made it real for her was, you know, we get to the mall, there's no cars there, we can park right in front, we walk through the doors, and then basically every store had the gates down, which I don't even know why the mall is open.
That's a good question.
Right? I mean, like, what's the point of it being, like, the only thing that was open was, like, GNC, which I'm sure they're probably making a killing on people buying, you know, immunity supplements, and then, you know, some store where you could buy work clothes, where you could buy scrubs and, you know, clothes like Carhartt stuff for construction, which also makes sense, right?
Right.
I mean, the nurses need to be able to buy clothes or whatever, new scrubs and things like that, as I'm sure.
Probably more than usual.
Yes. And, you know, anybody working out in the field, they need to be able to have access to things as well. So, but it was just, you know, watching my 5-year-old kind of realize, like, what the hell is going on that the Disney store is closed when I can get in the mall? Like, she, like, was, like, genuinely pissed. Like, was pissed that I brought her there, Like, she asked me just to lift up the gate, and I'm like, well, that's kind of the point of the gate, is so we can't get in, and there's no one in there to sell it to us. And she's like, well, just leave money on the counter. I'm like, no, we're not breaking into the Disney store. We're not stealing anything. We're not leaving money on, none of this is, like, we're going to just go. Cinnabon was also closed, so I wasn't able to get a Cinnabon, which I've been craving all week.
Wow.
And
I love Cinnabon.
I love
them
too.
They're disgusting, but they're awesome.
They are, and I'm glad that they were closed, because if they'd been open, I would have bought one, so I'm glad that they didn't. I didn't need that 1,200 calories.
One of my favorite Louis C.K. jokes is, he's such a mess that he buys Cinnabon at the airport that he arrived at.
I've done that.
I have too.
I've done it. I've done it in Vegas. I've done it in Canton. I've done it in Baltimore.
I've done it once.
I've done it cross country. I'm just like, man, we just
landed. I mean, it's good. It's fucking delicious.
I need me a Manhattan and a Cinnabon.
They are delicious.
Yes. Anyway.
But so real quick on the primary, with the way things broke out, Biden has essentially locked it up. I mean, I saw reports that Bernie was dropping out or suspending his campaign. Tulsi has officially dropped out. So my girl is officially out of the race.
Yep.
It's Biden, folks, and I wrote an article on WhiskeyCongress.com that basically said, hey, the Bernie folks who are throwing a tantrum, stop. Please read it.
It was tweeted out on our Twitter account, so you can get to it there. You can just go to the site, WhiskeyCongress.com. Also, I will, if Bernie wants to stay in and fight it, he can, but the problem is, it's just being overshadowed right now by what's going on with the virus.
Right.
So it's almost like, what's the point? Like, and he's got to think about, money and time and energy. Does he want to waste people's time, energy, and money continuing to campaign when there's essentially an insurmountable lead?
And who knows if there's even going to be primaries.
Yeah, and that's,
until June.
And obviously every conspiracy theorist that supports Bernie is out. And I get where they're coming from. But there's even a bigger conspiracy that China is doing this because they lost the trade war with the United States. So this is them getting back at us for that, even though all the trade policies are still in place. So I'm not sure how
more of them have died than anyone else.
Right.
Never mind.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot more of them. So, I mean, it's just like, well, they were willing to sacrifice.
As a country, China's willing to throw human misery at economics.
Exactly. There's plenty of holes in the theory of, the Chinese releasing this bioweapon out. But nonetheless, it's got to be frustrating for Bernie and his camp.
Oh yeah,
to be in this position, I completely understand it. I do feel sorry for him. I don't feel like I said, I never felt that Bernie was the right guy. I don't think he has the right demeanor. I don't think he has the right. Everyone's like, oh, he's showing everybody how you should be a leader right now. No, he's just being his consistent self, grumpy old man, yelling at people. And, wanting his way,
you and I are not on the same page there, because I think when you get Bernie in the right venue, he's not just grumpy old man,
But
I get your point.
But that's the whole idea that, with certain quarterbacks, like, well, if you build a team around them and a special blah, 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 it's just like, okay, fine. But in this venue, he sucks. I'm not too heartbroken over it. Like, for the sake of democracy, you wish things could have gone smoother and just played out more naturally. But, unless there's some sort of dramatic turnaround, something happens to Biden, or I think I saw something where Bernie won the remaining states. I think he could win, or at least have a contested convention,
which will be skewed completely towards Biden.
Once you bring superdelegates into play,
fuck. Let's not even go down that.
I know.
It's at this point, it's not worth my blood pressure to talk about superdelegates, especially when we have these going on. So this week there was a lot of talk. Obviously, coronavirus has dominated everything, and we have to talk about it.
Yeah.
I wish we could talk about other stuff. We will talk about other stuff too.
We'll get into it. But we can't ignore it. Right.
Trump has started calling it the Chinese virus, and the way in which he's been doing so.
Well, it's not just him. It's his, the administration is putting out a message. And everyone in the administration has called it the Chinese virus at least once, very publicly and openly. And then obviously all the surrogates are not only calling it the Chinese virus, but then why can't we call it that? Why is it racist? Blah, 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 blah. And kind of going into that. I think some of the progressives are going a little over the top with, you know, like, oh, you're calling it a Chinese virus. That is racist. And every time you say it, it affront, like, okay, guys.
There's someone called it the Kung Flu, yes, which is both racist and funny.
Right. Very racist. Very hilarious. It
kind of is.
You know, I mean, and there's, you know, I mean, there have been plenty of very distasteful names for it. But, you know, and people reference like, oh, well, the Spanish flu, you know, like, what wasn't that racist towards Spanish? Well, the Spanish flu wasn't called the Spanish flu because it originated in Spain. The Spanish flu was called the Spanish flu because Spain was neutral during World War I and their press was the first to report the disease. Right.
I didn't know that.
When the Spanish flu happened in 1918.
Yep.
Right. Like, so they were the first to report it as in the Spanish flu was actually something that they believe originated in Kansas on a military base.
Really?
Yes. Kansas.
I didn't know that.
Right. Like,
let's call it state. The Kansas flu.
Right. I mean, like, so it's not called the Kansas flu or the U.S. flu or whatever. And there have been plenty of other diseases or viruses or whatever you want to call them that have names attributed to them of where they were initially discovered
or reported, right? Yep.
Or reported or where they originated from, and they have people's names and all that stuff. Well, back in 2013, the CDC and the World Health Organization, the WHO, not the terrible band.
How dare you?
I know. That's all right. Somebody,
I won't get fooled again, Steve.
God. Actually, I didn't realize
don't
I like
talk about the, my generation.
I didn't realize I liked the Who. Not that I even liked them. It's just I think I learned them to appreciate the Who because of CSI Miami.
Yeah.
Yes. Actually, because of all the CSIs, because all their theme songs were Who songs.
I didn't know that.
Right. And then the Who did the Super Bowl, and it was awful.
had to get the dig in.
Right. So. You have the, like, so the WHO and the CDC came up with this, like, all these things back in 2013, like, we're going to stop this whole thing with naming diseases after country of origin, specific people, names, like the, you know, like these, some of these diseases with names, like the families after the fact are like, hey, we really aren't a big fan of you calling ALS the Lou Gehrig disease. Like, you know, that's not how we want to remember our family member. And there's others, and people are like, well, what about Ebola? Like, again, like, Ebola was found in Africa in a specific, whatever, right, in a region, the Ebola region. No one's going to listen to Africans fighting about, like, hey, please don't call us that. Like, you're still freely tossing around the word nigger. So, I mean, like, if you're not going to stop that, you're not going to stop calling the Ebola virus the Ebola virus. So, CDC and the WHO came through and said, all right, listen, no more naming it the names of the people who discovered it, no more naming it of the region where it was found, and there's all these things. So now they come up with these very generic, and, you know, they try to be as science-related specific names as possible to avoid all that, right?
Because there's nothing American public loves better than it's science.
Right. Well, they took a proactive step to try to remove the politicization of naming a disease, right? And this was done back in 2013, or maybe it was 2015, or no, it was 2013, so it was a while ago, right? And then, so when you go and you throw the Chinese virus on it, like, you're doing that for a specific reason, right? You want to point blame at the Chinese, sure, at the Chinese government, which is fine. We can do that. We can do that politically without actually, because the reason why this country, the United States, we don't have a good history, right, with race, right, for anybody.
Wait, what happened?
I mean, we just
we're
don't,
cool, right?
Right. I mean, like, so there's a story.
I love slipping that we're cool, right? Thing every time I get a chance.
But there was a story that I posted on Twitter. It's probably buried by now. But this woman who was, you know, an Asian woman who was taking her trash out, got approached by a guy and called her a damn Chinese, and they had an exchange. And as a woman being yelled at by a man about her race, she was scared. You know, now for me, my initial thought was, this shit happens all the time. What are you so scared about? But then I think, she's a woman, right? Like, this is a man, and she was intimidated, right? I am not a person that's easily intimidated, right? For a multitude of reasons. So when racial things like that happen to me, my first instinct isn't fear. You know, I usually have to...
You know, oddly, your first instinct is usually reason.
Right.
There have been multiple times when you said, oh, you... And then, no, I'm talking about professionally. I don't know about, like, on the street. But professionally, when you've been approached inappropriately about race, your thoughts are, oh, you just said that. Now let's talk.
Right.
I didn't mean to sound like Loki there. I didn't mean but to
even,
do that.
Even on the street, typically it's, you know, laugh it off, try to resolve the situation.
And prove people wrong and show them, like, hey, you're
not... Right, you know, I mean, you usually don't... My first thing isn't to go confront the person physically, but at the same time, my first instinct isn't fear.
Right.
Right? Like, I'm not intimidated, I'm not scared. I do have to do a real quick analysis of, all right, if this gets physical, what are the possibilities of happening? And it's just like, usually there's a mess that's made.
I like your odds.
And I have to deal with police. So we try to avoid that when we can. But that's just anyway, a little bit why you want to, we should want to stay away from calling it the Chinese virus. But obviously we have that certain group within our population who feel the need that you want to tag, you know, it's almost like hashtag the Chinese virus. You want to tag the Chinese right. with it so that everyone knows to remember to blame the Chinese and this is all their fault. Like, screw our reaction to it. Screw our preparedness. This is all the Chinese fault because it's the Chinese virus. Remember that.
My brother's Korean. He has two kids who are mixed race but look Asian because they're half Asian. And I grew up with people calling my brother all kinds of racial slurs. They called him a Jap. I'm like, hey, actually, he's Korean. What's the difference? And I won't even go down that road again. But, I mean, I've grown up dealing with racism against Asians more than the average Joe, because I grew up in a very white neighborhood with an Asian younger brother, and my dad made it real clear, like, your job is to keep him safe. Mm-hmm. And I can't tell you how many fights I got in because of some asshole talking shit to my brother, and this is 1980, whatever the fuck.
Yeah.
Now it's a disease that's killing thousands of people across the world. And fear and hatred work yes. as a political tool, and that's why Trump is doing it.
Right,
he
exactly.
knows he's poking the, you know, stirring up the fire, and then he's doing the thing that I hate more than almost anything. Doing something that we all know why you're doing it, and then denying it and going, well, what do you mean? I'm just saying it's from there.
Right.
Why would you possibly be offended by that?
And also, again, it's jingling the keys, right?
Yep.
Look at this over here. Oh, you're talking about why I'm calling it what I'm calling it. You're talking about that. You're not paying attention to the response. You're not paying attention to all these other things that are happening in the background. You're completely distracted. So we're more than willing to fight you on what we're calling the disease, as opposed to having to explain to right. you how we're properly, right. you know, flattening the curve and preventing this from coming out. Now, the one good thing that's happening, again, is that Anthony Fauci, who is the doctor who's kind of head of getting this all under control for the federal government, the man's doing a really good job. I think his messaging is on point. It's on brand. I think people trust him from both sides of the aisle. This guy has no... He's got no skin in this game, right? Like, he's got no, like, he's not worried.
Doing his job.
Like, he's not worried. Like, listen, this guy is almost, he's 79 years old, right? He's worked for 6 presidents. He doesn't care about Trump, right? He doesn't, like, Anthony Fauci is a guy, like, he came, like, his parents are immigrants, right? His parents are, like, he's 80 years old, so his parents came fresh off the boat.
Sure.
Right? All this guy knows is how to work. He's still running 3 miles a day. He normally runs 11 miles a day. He's 79 years old.
I ran a mile last week.
How you feel?
Sore.
You okay?
Sore.
This dude is working 19 hours a day and still making sure he's getting his 3 miles in.
I don't think you're exercise shaming me intentionally, but it's working.
I'm not, but I am. Right? I am a little bit. I do when I can right now, so I am. But this dude's 79 years old. He's running these 3 miles a day. He's putting in 19-hour days, and he is working for our country. He doesn't give a shit about Trump and his messaging. Trump can't control what this guy says. This guy's going to come out and he's being honest. He's being as transparent as he can be. He's frustrated, but at the same time, he feels like we're making progress. Trump
and his job has never been more important than it is right now.
Than it is right now, right? And Trump, his message is fluctuating. Obviously, he's had to pivot. Fox News has had to pivot, right? It went from it's a hoax, it's a impeachment attempt, it's blah, blah, blah. They're trying to take down Trump, too. Everyone's now taking it serious, and this is a big deal. And, you know, we've reached this point. Now people from Fox are getting it. You know, people from different news teams. I just saw a terrible story about a guy at a local TV station that died. He was covering it. Yeah, he was a cameraman with a reporter, and he caught it, and he died.
Do you know what state? I don't even know.
I don't know. I mean, I just saw it briefly. It was just like a, you know, but it's interesting to see this sort of pivot. And then, you know, we had the situation where an NBC reporter approached Trump and not approached him, but it was a press conference, and he asked Trump a question, just like, listen, people are scared. You've got a lot of people with this illness out there. You know, people are locked down. They're in quarantine. This is different for everyone in the country. What do you have to say for the American people that are scared?
And should we talk about it? Should we listen to it?
Yeah, let's listen to it.
All right. Okay, so here's the exchange, and we can listen to it live and then get into it afterwards.
Dead. What do you say the Americans were scared, though? I guess nearly 200 dead, 14,000 who are sick, millions, as you witnessed, who are scared right now. What do you say to Americans who are watching you right now who are scared?
I say that you're a terrible reporter. That's what I say. I think it's a very nasty question, and I think it's a very bad signal that you're putting out to the American people. The American people are looking for answers, and they're looking for hope. And you're doing sensationalism, and the same with NBC and Comcast. I call it Comcast. Let me just ask for whom you work. Let me just tell you something. That's really bad reporting. And you ought to get back to reporting instead of sensationalism. Let's see if it works. It might and it might not. I happen to feel good about it, but who knows? I've been right a lot. Let's see what happens, John.
What do you say the Americans were scared, though? I guess nearly 200. Right.
So, first of all,
maybe not the best response.
That's one of those things that's really funny until you break it down and realize that's the president of the United States who's dodging it's a legitimate question. Well, what do you say to people who are scared?
But it's a softball question too, right? I mean, I think it's an opportunity for Trump to say, for those Americans that are scared, you know, your government is with you. We support you. We're here. We're fighting for you day and night. You know, please listen to your local officials. You know, practice good hygiene and social distancing. You know, if you need to reach out to people, then, you know, call them on the phone and you know, do what you can, and we'll get through this together, right? Like, that's easy. I think anybody could say that. Mike DeWine is doing it here in Ohio, and he's doing a really good job. There's multiple examples of it, and he was literally thrown a softball, and it's like he caught, it's like if he was actually at bat in a softball game, it's like someone threw him a softball pitch, he threw the bat down, he caught the ball, he fired it back overhand at the pitcher's head, hit him in the face, and then went and kicked him in the stomach. Like, what?
And what I love the most about it, we obviously can't do it on audio only, is the reporter's reaction. He's literally like, are you kidding? Like, I asked you a softball question.
Right, the reporter's face was like, You know, I mean, it's a really bad response, and I think there will be a time where people will appreciate how bad of a response it was. Right. It's inciting a lot of anger in people, and because Trump is so hated, everything that he does is under a microscope, so everyone is turning everything he says and does into it's the worst thing ever. And they've been doing that literally since the guy started running, right?
Right,
And so to a degree, there's a little bit of numbness to that. But his surrogates, you know, Britt Hume came out and said, oh, well, that was a terrible question. And, you know, it was a gotcha question. What's got you about what do you tell people that are scared? Fuck you is what I tell them. Right. Fuck you. You know, I mean, like, that's what it felt like he wanted to say. And I'm not, you have to wonder in a private moment if, you know, he went back behind stage and did say that.
And went, okay.
Right. But I mean, it was remarkably bad.
And. That's one you should have been able to see coming.
Yes.
You're going to ask a question, what do you say to the people who are scared about this? And for him to get flustered like that would be absolutely comical, if not for the fact that that's the president of the United States.
Yeah, I mean, and then the reporter worked for NBC and, you know, and Comcast, right. And Trump goes to that. But it should be noted, like, listen, Trump was on NBC with The Apprentice, right?
Yep.
The show had been losing viewers and viewership for years. Trump will tell you it was like the most successful television show in the history of TV. The show had been losing viewership for years. And they were actually looking for a reason to fire him. And then they came out with The Celebrity Apprentice, which gained some momentum, but then guess what? Started losing viewers.
Well, and then he made the comment about Mexicans are rapists, and that was their excuse to fire him.
They fired him in 2015 when he decided he was going to run for president. Right. So they used that as their out to fire him, and he's had it out for NBC ever since, right? And NBC and Comcast negotiated, like, they played hardball with him during the negotiations of the show, and then ultimately they fired him. Trump doesn't like people who don't like him. Right, like that's why.
What do you base that on?
His history with the NFL, right? I mean, the NFL.
I'm being sarcastic as fuck, dude.
I know you are, but I'm trying to keep us moving here so we don't get too off track. So you know his history with the UN with the NFL, right? He runs the USFL under the ground. He sues the NFL. He wins that suit. He gets awarded, you know,
$3.
And also the NFL says, by the way, you're banned for an extended period of time. He tries to buy back in. With the Buffalo Bills, your team, and then ultimately they say, we want to look at your books. He says, no way. That deal falls through. And so he's got beef with the NFL. He's got beef with NBC. So this wasn't, part of this was had to do with the pressure, right? That's the pressure cooker that is dealing with a country that's in crisis.
Yeah.
But part of it is Trump is never going to let go of his grudge of NBC and Comcast. And so he knows that the reporter, like Trump is... He's a lot of things, but he knows people, places, and things, and he knows faces. He knew that that guy was an NBC reporter, and he was going to take that opportunity. Like, no one from NBC or CNN is going to get an opportunity to, look good because of Trump, right? He's going to make sure that if it's a face-to-face confrontation, that they feel his wrath. You know, in terms of CNN, Jeff Zucker, the guy who ran NBC, also runs CNN. Right, like so, and Jeff Zucker was there when Trump was on The Apprentice, right?
Okay.
Jeff Zucker was one of the people who fired him. Jeff Zucker is now with CNN, so now I don't think it's a surprise that Trump hates CNN. CNN also, you know, has the knives out for Trump. So I think that people need to understand the background of this, right? A little bit, just to, you know what I mean? It's not just Trump breaking under pressure. He did that because he can't stand the guy,
right?
And or what the guy represents to him, which is NBC, the company that fucked him.
Well, that's one way to look at it, in terms of whether they fucked him or he fucked himself up. But yeah, it was just it is comical, other than the fact that it's our current reality.
Yeah.
All right, can we move on from coronavirus?
Yes, we can.
All right, thank you. So thank you for bearing with us through that, because I know you're getting all of it, but we have our show to talk about. We can't ignore that issue. But there's a bunch of other things going on, and they're getting almost no coverage. First one I want to talk about is something you brought to my attention. And this is so fucked up. So a woman in Texas was on parole, and she voted while she was on parole, not knowing she legally couldn't.
Mm-hmm.
She gets sentenced to 5 years in prison. 5 years in prison for voting as herself.
Right. So she voted on a provisional. Her name's Crystal Mason, and she voted on a provisional ballot that was never counted. And
very important point. The vote didn't even actually impact the election that she voted in.
Exactly. So she voted on a provisional ballot that was never counted. She gets busted for it. Texas obviously was trying to prove, the narrative of voter fraud is something that the Trump supporters and the GOP love to put out there,
sure,
because it
they want to do laws that help to suppress voting.
Right. It helps to substantiate their argument that there's mass voter fraud and that it's illegal immigrants and, you know, people that the Democrats are recruiting minorities that are coming out of prison to vote illegally and influence elections, you know, in the direction of the Democrats. So they use this as a way to, you know, make this woman, Crystal Mason, the poster child for voter fraud, right? And so what happened is she gets out of jail. She's on parole. She, you know, we'll say she's paid her fines, but she's got parole for X number of years. She assumed that she was out. Once she was out, that she got her voting rights back. She did not. It's Texas, so I think that's a ballsy assumption to make. And that's essentially the court's argument, right? Like, you shouldn't have assumed that you had your voting rights back. You should have got that verified.
You should know we're racist.
Well, I mean, in part
that was
of that,
unfair, but it really wasn't.
Right. I mean, it's, but the truth of the matter is what Texas is saying is ignorance of the law doesn't excuse you from penalties from violating that law. And it's not fair. Now, I think prosecutorial discretion could have been used here. and should have been used, but they're clearly trying to make a point. They are clearly trying to intimidate people from making anywhere near this sort of mistake, but even considering trying to vote in any situation where their voting rights are in question, right? Like, so this is literally trying to push people back. Like, if you're even close, like, if you're close at all, and you think there's any possibility...
Doubt, don't vote, right, we will throw the hammer on you
that
if you do.
That's what they're trying to put forward. When in doubt, don't vote. And I think the message should actually be the opposite. When in doubt, figure out, right? When in doubt, figure it out. Go figure out what you can and can't do. And if you can't do it right now, figure out what the timetable is for you to be able to vote so you know when your vote can actually be counted. And you don't run into this situation. They're going to appeal it. Hopefully it works out and they can get her out of jail. I mean, it just seems ridiculous that you're going to send this woman to jail for 5 years for this.
I mean, 5 years in prison.
Why this can't be a fine? Why this can't, like, there's other...
Why can't it be a don't do this again? Look, I'm a bit of a softie. I'll acknowledge that. But talk about a victimless crime. The vote didn't fucking count. Right. No individuals were impacted in any way other than the person that had to sit behind you in line waited 3 extra minutes. That is the atrocity of this, I'm finger quoting, crime.
Right.
She made a mistake. It got caught. It impacted nothing. Right. And 5 years in prison? Are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah, it's just insane. And
what are you in for? Well, I held up a 7-Eleven at gunpoint and I winged a guy in the ear. What'd you get? 3 years.
Right.
Oh, what are you in for? Well, I got 5 years because I punched holes in a ballot that didn't get counted.
Yep.
Are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah. I mean, and this is one of those things that really, I think, attacks the attacks our criminal justice system in a way like it's a cancer that's eating at it because people see this and say, how can this be justice?
Right.
Like, I mean, you look at this and you say, how is this just, how is this right? Like,
I mean, feel safer knowing she's off the streets. Right.
I mean, if you strip away your political, if you strip away your political affiliations and you strip away race and just look at this strictly from a position of a human being and the way laws and things are supposed to work, you can't have leniency. You can't have a case by case basis where you look at it and you say, yes, a mistake was made. Yes, you broke the law. We're going to penalize you with. And what they're saying is that she's violated her parole. And because she violated her parole, she's able to receive the maximum sentence. Things that, I mean, and it's just, it's a miscarriage of justice that could have been corrected if they wanted to, but they didn't. You can obviously tell they didn't want to, right? This isn't.
It seems the opposite. It's really wanted to make a statement using this case.
This is an entire system that wanted to take this woman and splatter her up on a wall for everyone to see and say, fuck with us and this is what will happen to you.
Yeah, which is legally imposed voter suppression, right? It's a scare tactic.
And where this stems from is that back in 2013, the Supreme Court struck down the part of the Voting Rights Act that said, like, listen, these certain states that have a history of voter intimidation, voter suppression, things like that, you have to bring your vote, any changes to your voting laws, you need to bring to the federal government for us to review in federal court, period. Right? Well, the Supreme Court shut that down. That's Section 4 of the Voting Rights Act. They shut that down completely. Right? Like, so those states who formally had to go, and if they wanted to make any sort of changes, they had to go and take it before a federal court. Now they can just make their own rules. All right? Which the court said, listen, it's a different time. People aren't racist anymore. Racism has gone away. And then states like Texas, Alabama, Mississippi, what did they do? Well, as soon as that was struck down, it didn't take them very long to start shutting down polling places in places of minority concentration.
And what's kind of, I'm going to say this in a way that I hope doesn't come off as me being an asshole, but Texas was essentially a dyed-in-the-wool red state for most of my life.
Yeah.
Now, apparently, it's getting pushed towards purple.
Yes.
And I think sending that message in a state that is leaning towards, hey, maybe this isn't a slam dunk Republican state, makes this case that much more important.
That's exactly what that is. That's exactly what, like, when and that's why this is really, really critical, And I think this goes to show you, like, you know, when I was trying to have this conversation with you about Texas becoming a purple state and not being that red state that was so right. consistently known for, you were pushing back on me. And I'm just like, if this was not the case, then there's no way that you would have Texas doing what they're doing, shutting down these polling places in these key areas and having these lines until 2 o'clock in the morning. And, you know, having black people wait for
7 hours in the primary
hours, you know what I mean? Like way after the polls should have been closed because they've closed these polling stations and made it that much more difficult for people to vote.
Yeah,
right.
You're right.
You know, I mean, and it's more just to show like this is real, and there's a reason why the Voting Rights Act should not have been changed because left to their own devices, these states operate in a way where they can't be trusted.
And Texas, I was going to make a snarky like, has Texas ever shown us a reason? Okay, I'm not going to bother doing that shit.
Right.
Yeah, this is a case that needs to get more attention, and with everything else going on, it's not. And look, you know. I do not hide from or apologize for my overall general liberal points of view, specifically with criminal justice. However, there are times when liberalism goes too far. Yes. And the state of California has proven this.
Time and time again.
Look, I've spent a bunch of time in Southern California, generally loved it. There's parts of Southern California I want nothing to do with, but, man, me in Orange County and San Diego County... it's one of the few places I ever think, fuck it, I'm going there to retire. Mm. I love parts of Southern California. Never spent any time in Northern California. But anyway, there was an incident in California that you brought to my attention. Yes. So let me throw the ball to you and say, run with this.
I just saw it on Twitter. You see these two people at a Walgreens store, somewhat casually shopping, but, you know, pretty aggressively putting things in a large bag.
Like a duffel bag.
And then it's just like, what is happening here? And then they turn and then they just walk out of the store. Right? They just walk. They don't pay. They don't know nothing.
Don't even fake it.
Right. They don't even fake it. They got sunglasses on, but no hoods, no nothing. No mask. They just robbed the store. Broad daylight. They're doing it under the pretense while everything is on lockdown and quarantine and social distancing, blah, blah, blah. So apparently that gives you the right to just go rob a store, right?
Right.
I mean, it makes no sense. And again, California.
Let me paint the picture a little bit because the two people working in conjunction, you said both of them wearing sunglasses, and they're just shoveling stuff into these bags mm-hmm. in front of a clerk who's watching them. And that clerk knows... there's nothing I can do.
Right, like, because they have
policy. California law. There we
right,
go.
They have a law that the store workers can't physically engage people that are...
As I smack my mic arm.
Right, that are, you know,
right.
Shoplifting and beyond.
The clerks are told, if you engage these people and touch them, you might be sued or charged.
Right.
So you basically have to let them go. And I saw that in the article you sent me that if the theft is under $950. It's essentially
it's a
slap
off.
On the wrist. And,
yeah,
and
I mean, it's a charge off, and it's a ticketable fine. But
offense, yeah.
Or offense. The thing about it, it's hard to say because I'm not exactly sure what they were taking, but they were taking a lot. So I feel like, I mean, you take enough $10 things, it can add up pretty quickly. But and those bags were huge.
Yeah,
that's the other thing. Like, I mean, they weren't small.
They were
purses. These were legitimate
gym bags. Yeah,
like yes, gym bags and beach bags that the dude is just shoveling things into. I guess the point is that like there's again, folks, common sense, balance, decent human decency. Put the we before the me. Do that shit, right? Like, I mean, like just. You do it, and we get through this faster. We can get some sort of return to normalcy. Although I don't know if you can
what
normalcy, like how you define that at this point. But that was just insane to me. And while you know the worker couldn't have done something, I just feel like had I been there as a patron, I would, knowing myself, I would have been tempted to clothesline that guy. Right.
I'm sure you would have.
You know, I mean, like,
But you have to give the worker to have a funny moment.
Yes.
You wanted or do I get it?
No, you can go ahead and say
okay.
it.
Okay, so the worker sees what's going on, recognizes that he can't do anything about it, and literally yells at the people who are stealing from the store that pays his rent, that keeps
yeah.
him alive, and said, I hope you overdose.
Right. Like
which
just,
is a
I
shitty thing
overdose.
To say, but I think it's kind of funny. Again,
you can
Kung
find
Flu,
the video.
Kung Flu is shitty. Well, you tweeted
yeah.
it, I believe.
Yeah, you can find the video on our Twitter account at whiskeycongress.com. Again, with the amount of stuff that's going on, I'm sure it's buried down there. But I tweeted it out early this morning. So,
But the big point is when you try to go with we can't ever try to hurt people who are suffering. I'm agree with that in concept, but you can't just say and all bets are off now because things are bad. So you can rob and steal.
So what's crazy is progressives have are really extreme, right? And that's what makes progressives scary to me, right? So my cousin who lives in Washington, he's super far left, progressive, liberal,
state or liberal, DC?
Washington State.
Okay.
And you know he's got some issues. His stepson is disabled, and he's actually got a really bad form of arthritis that's just really painful. Medicine's really expensive, so he is 100% pro Bernie. You know, he's one of those people like voting in Bernie is life or death. If you don't vote him in, people like me will die. You know, we have to have socialized health care because people like me will die. Like everything is people will die if we don't do things their way. Exactly. Right. Period.
Right.
But you could say, I even told him, listen, I'm going to vote Democrat. I just don't like Bernie. Well, you should like Bernie. Bernie is everything that you need and blah, 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 blah. I'm like, he's actually not everything I need. You know, he's not. I'll be fine with or without Bernie. You know, my life will not change. It didn't change with Obama. I don't think Bernie is more capable than Obama by any stretch of the imagination in anything on earth. So, if you needed something negotiated, who do you want to do it? Obama or fucking Bernie?
100% Obama. So, and that's where Bernie's gonna. Well, first of all, like we talked about at the beginning of the show, he's a non-entity in my opinion at this point. And again, most I wrote that article,
but yeah,
but. If he were to become president, he would have a horrible hurdle to overcome because he left the Democratic Party 7 years ago or whatever it was.
And Nancy Pelosi is not the type who'll just be like, all right, Bernie, it's all cool. We'll do whatever you want to do. She's not. She's not that type. She's not going to let him just run roughshod. Neither she nor Chuck Schumer are that type of people. So he had a lot of hurdles, even if he were to overcome the big hurdle of becoming the nominee and then winning the election. So, but anyway, my cousin is this huge, far-right progressive liberal who's all about, he literally has said in points in time that the United States should have no borders. Right? No wall, no borders. We shouldn't even be checking people coming in. It should all be free flow, right? But then, you see the kids partying down in Florida, and his first thing is put a cage around them. Put a cage around them and don't let them out for 3 weeks or whatever. I'm like, well, hold on. You literally said...
Putting a cage around them is actually a good idea for a bunch of reasons.
Well,
a bunch of hot young people in a cage.
That's a terrible idea unless you could spray them with, airborne birth control.
Good point.
Because otherwise, you're going to have a huge influx. Let me tell you, you lock me in a cage on spring break for that extended period of
nothing
time.
Nothing but bikinis and board shorts.
There's going to be a whole lot of little Stevies running around. I'm just telling you. Some intentional, some by accident. Oops, sorry.
All by accident.
Slipped and fell.
All right. I apologize for creating that divergence.
But anyway, that's a crazy extreme, right? So you've got this crazy extreme of we should have no borders and everybody roam free to you're not doing what I want you to do, so you should be thrown in a cage and you should not be allowed to move or do anything.
That is completely
right.
Fucked up.
And then you also have this instance of these people right here, right? These people are, I guarantee you, they are, you got to take coronavirus is everything and blah, blah, blah. You got to protect the people, blah, blah, blah. It's just like, oh, we're on lockdown, so I have to go rob a Walgreens to get the things that I need, right? It's just, I've been off of work for 2 days, so now I have negative money, so now I have to rob a Walgreens. It's just, these extremes are fucking nuts.
They are. And, I want to throw a quick shout out to the folks in the service industry, because the folks that are dealing with that.
So, if you're a far left progressive, I'm not attacking you. But this is why people say you're dangerous, right? And they're worried about you running government because there's no rules or there's all the rules and it's a little bit scary, right? The idea that you're more than willing to throw people in a cage because they're not doing what you want them to do. And yes, for the greater good of the public, but then at the same time, you can go as far left as there should just be no borders at all, right?
You can steal from Walgreens.
Or we're just going to rob a Walgreens because you've been out of work for a day. It's just Jesus Christ, let's have a little bit of sensibility here. There's literally they're working on this, passing a law as fast as I've ever seen a law passed to get money in people's hands. And it's just fuck it. I'm just going to go, Will Smith, I Am Legend. So, speaking of legend, depending on your definition of that, we lost one in the country music world, if you're a country music fan. Kenny Rogers died today.
Yeah, and you know, Kenny Rogers to me is kind of like what Hall & Oates is to you, in the sense that my mom played that shit over an 8-track that was in the wall of our house in West Seneca, New York. 8-track in the
wall.
Damn. Yeah, oh yeah, we were... That was hip. That was high tech in 1980.
I'm sure.
Whatever. Shit, 78. I mean, we had an 8-track in our wall that projected through the house, and Meatloaf, Bread, and Kenny Rogers probably got played more than anything else, and Blondie.
Okay.
But anyway, Kenny Rogers has a kind of a
song. By the way, I don't know who Bread is. I don't know if I could.
They're not very good. They're really awful, actually.
Okay, I was going to say, I don't think I could name a Bread song.
You've probably heard them, and I'm sorry that you did. I used to tell my mom that Meatloaf and Bread should form a band called Sandwich, because I was 10, and that was funny at the time.
Funny now.
Get that shit away from me.
Right. I love dragged out. Meatloaf the food, the guy.
And the performer in Fight Club.
Yes, he was good in Fight Club. He's got one song that I know, and it's awful, about doing stuff for love or whatever.
I would do anything. Now, Paradise by the Dashboard Lights is a classic song.
It's a weird genre that I don't know very well.
If you were in like the high school dance era in my time, that was like the guys against the girls, because it's all about, I want to fuck you. No, you got to prove you're interested in actually being with me. No, I really want to get laid. Well, you know what? If you're not serious about it, and then you've never heard the song? Paradise by the Dashboard Lights?
Oh my God, really? No,
For once, I'm talking about music that you don't know about. This is shocking shit.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm not into the Meatloaf catalog.
You can see paradise. I know. Does not help. All right, I will deal with this off air. Weird. But anyway.
All the music I have.
Kenny Rogers, The Gambler, Lucille, Lay Lady Lay, Islands on the Stream, was an iconic country, almost country pop. Maybe one of the first country pop performers, other than maybe John Denver. They were kind of the same.
And I don't know. Yeah, I mean, Kenny Rogers and Dolly Parton had an amazing relationship for a long time.
Kenny Rogers did movies.
Yeah, I mean,
they were bad movies.
Yeah, but still. But what's the movie? Was it Lonesome Dove?
He did. Was that him? He did one called. Oh God, I'm going to draw a blank. I'm not going to try to dig it up.
But
of my
any
brain.
Of your like country anyway, western style movies, things like that.
So I thought he died, and I'm like, I didn't realize he was still alive. I thought he died 10 years ago. Mm. Having said that, The Gambler is an iconic song. Yeah. Lucille is an iconic song. You picked the wrong time to leave me, Lucille. Yeah. So rest in peace, Kenny Rogers. That's all I can do from that. He was an icon. And
if you're into country music, you know it. If you don't know, then like
I can't believe you don't know some of these. I'm not an attack. It's more like a, wow, I know the shit and you don't. But it was... What was on?
Yeah, I get it.
8 tracks. 8 tracks.
I listen to a lot of music, but there's some nooks and crannies I don't get into.
Your fanboy relationship with Hall & Oates to me is absolutely hysterical. Mm-hmm. You did this a whole bunch on Twitter this week, and people were going back and forth with you about Hall & Oates, and you were like, "Don't mess with Hall & Oates.
Don't fuck with Hall & Oates. They're a national fucking treasure, and I will knife you over it." I'm not kidding.
And I'm like, "All right, so we share a Twitter account for Whiskey Congress." And I'm like, there's probably people thinking it's that 48-year-old white guy talking about this.
Nope.
It's Steve.
Nope.
But anyway, all right. So we've talked about a bunch of stuff. And before we get going, and we'll throw in a bonus episode and talk some sports and some lighter things.
Yeah, hold on. We're going to do a bonus episode. It's going to be very NFL football heavy. And then we're also going to give some bonus information just on whiskey. You need to buy some budget whiskey because you want to stock up. Ohio, they may be closing liquor stores. We don't know, but just in case they do, you may make a run on some of these whiskeys that are cheaper but still good quality. So we're going to help you on the bottom lower shelves on our episode, and it'll be published at the same time, so you can roll right out of our big one into this little guy. But thanks for listening to both.
And we know that Jim is all about, I mean, I'm now talking to myself in the third person, but bargain whiskeys I'm all about that. So looking forward to talking about that. Yeah. We are at Whiskey Congress.
Don't listen to his. Just listen to mine.
No. Okay, because Steve is wrong and I'm right again. Anyway, at Whiskey Congress on Twitter and Instagram, Jim at WhiskeyCongress.com. If you want to email me, Steve at WhiskeyCongress.com. If you want to email him. Thank you for listening. We're out for now, but like Steve just said, back-to-back episodes coming with some lighter stuff following out.